The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast that doesn't touch itself when it thinks of you. Hello and welcome to The Gambling Files Podcast. Restored. I could start again because we've only just started, but I'm not going to because we are warts and all. Have you got warts, Fintan?
No. Don't have the pleasure.
As far as you know. Yes, let's not rule out that particular box of delights. Restored to normalcy following a week of madness.
So what did you do last week, John?
That's a great question, Fintan. What did you do last week?
I pressed buttons and asked questions on the podcast all at the same time. And my multitasking abilities were pushed to its absolute limit.
I hear you. You know, for anybody curious, the episodes where I'm quiet, it's not because I'm napping or whatever, not just that. It's because I'm furiously pressing buttons.
Because he's sending out his newsletter.
And so he's
like, oh shit, I forgot to do it again. Quick.
It's 3 o'clock. Fuck. That reminds me, I'll just give me a second.
See?
Oh. There you go. It's probably fine. I just send out yesterday's again. I'm just kidding. Would never do that. So, but that is exciting. So that was your first fully solo episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, because you've never actually let me do it all on my own.
Well, no, you see, you make it sound as though you've not been allowed, and that is quite simply not the case. No, it's not the case. I've always been like, look, I can record the intro with you or whatever, you did the episode, or you can do the intro as well. And you're always like, no.
Yeah. I do find the intro, for some reason, just I've got a mental block when it comes to the intro.
Trick is to just open your mouth and let things spill out.
Oh, that's the fear.
I think I just summed my career up. I put the career into career.
Yeah. What was really funny as well with the intro last week, I must have done about 4 takes.
Wow.
I know. And then every time I did it, I'm like, okay, I've nailed that. And I went, oh shit, I forgot to mention the sponsor, or I forgot to say about this.
Well, that seems like good timing.
You should sponsor. We should
mention our benevolent overlords, our BOs.
Yeah. BOs. Gaming Recruitment Solutions, grs-recruit.com.
It is a hyphen.
It is a hyphen, I promise. Give Paul a shout for all your gambling recruitment needs because they have the solutions.
They really do.
They do.
We're not just saying that idly.
Great bunch of lads.
I've never met Steve.
I think I met him once years ago at a thing.
Well, he must have left an impression on you if you only think you met him. Christ, Fintan.
I've met a lot of people though, mate. I'm like, you know.
My name's Fintan. I'm really popular.
I've met a lot of people. So Gaming Recruitment Solutions. If you're looking for a job or you're looking to hire, anything in the gambling industry, they can sort you out.
No, it's true. It is true.
Land-based, online.
Yeah. Oof.
Oof. Large scale kind of hiring stuff. They've got a lot of that going on. C-level executive stuff for all our C-level executive leaders, listeners.
They're mad for it. So previous episode. So my hair implants are taking quite nicely.
That's really good. It's like a nice little kind of stubble going on. It's like one of those, what was it, chia pets, was it, little grass?
Yeah, chia pet. Yeah, that's that. When they were asking me what I wanted to achieve, I misheard him and thought he said, do you want to look like a chia pet? Because, you know, he was speaking with a heavy Filipino accent. And I said, yeah, of course I want to look like a chia pet. And he's like, oh, okay. And that was that, pretty much.
I see the pec implants are also looking pretty good.
Yeah, nice.
Good work, man.
Yeah.
You take care of you. You get those upgrades in. It's good.
Yeah, well, I find these things, it's preferable to actually putting any work in.
they're talking about putting any work in. There is this new drug. Well, it's not a new drug, but there's a drug for diabetes. And it's been now taken. There's actually diabetics are complaining because there's a shortage of this drug because it's been taken by people for weight loss. And what it does is it does messes around with your ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone. And so basically it makes you feel not hungry.
What could possibly go wrong with that? I wonder how long it's going to be before somebody starves to death on that shit.
Well, you won't starve to death, but it regulates the ghrelin or whatever.
You get nutritionally deficient enough, you can fucking starve to death. Not technically starving to death, but for example, say you are eating little enough that your body is starved of calcium, you will start to leach it back out of your bones, right? Fair enough. Osteoporosis, you think. But actually, it turns out calcium is absolutely vital in regulating heartbeat, which is why some people will just fucking drop dead who are apparently healthy, because they will just suddenly have a heart attack, and it's to do with calcium and an imbalance in the body. So you could, in fact, you wouldn't technically be starving to death. It wouldn't be the lack of food as such, but you could really fuck yourself up.
But look, I just want to get skinny, mate. So
taking vitamins. I mean, it's the shittest fucking cut. How on earth that became a multi-billion pound empire is beyond me.
I just want to get skinny.
Take these. Fuck eating actual proper food. Why would you want to do that?
I don't want to put the effort in. We're literally just talking about not putting the effort in. And now all of a sudden you're telling me to put effort in, Mr.
Well, I was being sarcastic. Well, I can't put effort into my hair, can I? I can't wait for my eyebrows to grow out in order to comb them back.
No. I've reached the age where I've got to start trimming them. Madness.
I hear madness.
Like piano wires are there. I could go rot somebody with them.
So something that comes up in this episode is nicknames, because I mentioned my dear friend Stabby Pete.
Oh, you did mention Stabby Pete.
It reminded me of a story where I'm pretty sure I've told you this before. But there was a guy that he was in the year below me at school, right? And if you're in South Shropshire in the UK and you've got big ears, your nickname will always be Dacky.
Okay. Not Dumbo, not
No. No, Dacky, it's a colloquial thing. A Dack is an ear, so you got big ears, you're Dacky.
Okay.
Right. Apart from little Carl, who had really big ears, because his brother had really big ears as well, so he was Dacky's brother.
Okay. I was wondering, maybe the height kind of cancelled out the ears and you had to pick one, like, you know.
No, it's a good shout. But
you could do like Little Dacky. You could have combined that and call him Little Dacky, right?
No, I mean, it would have probably been something else that I picked up on there, but I'm not going to go into that because it might be litigious. Okay. So it's just, and his nickname was Dacky for, you know.
Hmm.
And when he left school, he got a job. Now, I've got to say, I didn't know Dacky personally. Knew who he was because he was the kid with the ears. And he left school and started work. And apparently, and I was told this by a reliable source, he was working. Yeah, as you do when you're 16, 17. And he saved up loads of money and he paid for the surgery to have his ears pinned back.
No way.
And I heard that and I was like, fucking good on him. That's like, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of things about accepting yourself and loving yourself for who you are and all of that. Mm. But there's also, if you don't like something, you know, he can't put the work in to put those back. So he put the work in to get them put back. And I said to the guy who told me, I said, well, that's amazing. How does he look? He said, well, it makes his nose look big.
Bastards.
And it turns out he had a great big beak that nobody had noticed.
Oh my God, that poor guy. That's
yeah, horrible. I just hope he didn't notice it. I hope he was just really happy about it. But it's a true story. So today's a big day, Fintan. Do you know why today's a big day?
No clue.
Right, today is my golden oldest son's 8th birthday.
That is a big day. Eight's a great age.
It's a big, big day. So, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Joe. Happy birthday to you. Yeah.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's good. His mum's done him proud, I think, on the presents. Yeah, most 8-year-olds, he's like, why can't I have a full-size Lamborghini? But, you know, he's at that age where he's going to have to start getting a bit more realistic. I've already done the maths to show him the cost of living for free at home. So I'll be showing those to him later. We'll go through the figures, Joe, at your birthday dinner.
Show him the compounding interest, you know, the bill. Oh, yeah. The bill he can expect when he turns 21. Yeah.
Oh, 21? 16.
16, okay.
If Dacky can get out there and work to fix his ears, Joe can work. But no, it's a big day. And also, I messaged Fern a little while ago to say happy giving birth to Joe Day, because I do always think that it's something that should be marked for mums as well as kids.
I think it should be marked for mums, but it should be marked for parents as well, of like, congratulations, you've kept your kid alive for another year. And I do feel like there needs to be like a little mini celebration around that of, you know, you've done another year's worth of hard work. It's a thing.
I like the way you shoehorned yourself into there, where I'm like, I'm giving the glory away and you're like, what about mine?
Exactly. What about me? We need more podcasts.
But anyway, if he's listening, happy birthday, Joe.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Joe. Enjoy.
Yeah, he's great. He came up to a few weeks ago. He came up the stairs to see me, and he was looking all upset. And he was, you know, he was obviously trying to dob his sister in. And he came up and he said I was stupid. And I said, when she said that, were you doing something stupid? And he stops and he looks at me and he smiles slowly and he just goes, yeah. He just looks at me with this great big grin and he goes, I wasn't expecting that question. I then walked back downstairs laughing.
Perfect.
He is very, very funny kid.
That is nice.
So, what else is new?
Well, obviously you were missed last week.
Yeah, right. The figures suggest otherwise, Fintan. The figures suggest the podcast was more popular than ever without me.
It was pretty good numbers last week. Pretty good. Yeah. I did, well, maybe it's the extra day as well, because I did manage to get it out on Tuesday.
Well, I'd have gotten this one out yesterday when we recorded it, but, you know, you were too busy and important.
That is true. It's all my fault, John. What else? I don't know. How's the newsletter going? Anything in the newsletter that cropped up that caught your eye?
It's good. We just announced the dates for the Responsible Gambling event.
Ooh. Oh, is this the mastermind, RG mastermind?
Yeah, the RG mastermind, yeah. So that's pretty cool. So basically, I think we've got 8 sessions, I think, off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so we've got Dr. Auer is presenting 2 of his papers, which will be open to questions. And we'll make the papers, we'll make sure the link is out there for the papers so people can actually come armed with questions.
Nice.
So what we're kind of proposing there is industry review, not just academic peer review.
Ooh.
Which, you know, it's either going to be great or fucking awful. It's going to be great.
It is going to be great.
So that's a new thing. We've got 2 of those sessions. We've got a session about the branding of RG.
Mm.
So about the design language and the terminology.
Nice. That's important.
You know, is that distancing people? Is it in fact reaching people, the right people in the right way? An argument for personalization, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. A discussion about language again, but it's what do we call it? Which is kind of important, and different terms for different modes of address, but the terminology that we use within the industry can leave us open to criticism. And so it's addressing that as well.
Yep.
It's going to be one which is about a multi-agency approach to RG and how, as an industry, we can support that.
Yep.
Because as we've seen on this podcast, the multi-agency approach is the only realistic one. Yep. And when we write our 1% check, we're largely doing fuck all to support that, but there are things that we can do with our teams and our communities. So we're going to be exploring a bit of that. That's about sort of accepting responsibility, but also educating in the wider world and looking at that and saying, look, we have responsibilities, we have regulatory codes, we have things that we have to do in order to operate and keep our licenses. But we need the rest of the world to also recognize that a gambling issue is one part of the problem. It is not the problem in itself necessarily. And so here's what we're encouraging. So it's kind of looking at that sort of like an ownership thing and a let's not fucking fanny about thing.
And how would I go about getting tickets for this event?
Hang on, I'm not done.
Oh, sorry. Oh, there's more?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, mate.
I know. I've got to find my list now. Fuck. You've thrown me. Oh, no, that's the wrong notepad. There it is. Whew. No, that's the wrong one. I've got a lot of notepads on the go, it turns out.
Mm. Well, what's interesting so far on the agenda is I think we've covered all of those topics on the podcast over the
years. Oh, is this you claiming credit again?
Well, I'm just killing time while you fanny about with your notepads.
Yeah. There it is. Got it. There's going to be an ethics panel.
Ooh.
Yeah, that one could be good.
We haven't done that one. I like that.
Yeah, we're going to look at women as problem gamblers. But that's, again, that's looking at language. It's looking at whether there is a slightly different approach needed. And we've got some people with real world experience in that as well. One of the most interesting ones that I'm looking forward to is a session called From Research to Implementation, which is I've done this great paper. It's brilliant. I found this, that, and the other out. Mm. What do I do with it?
Ooh, okay.
How do I actually take that to something that is actionable and working in a real life scenario? And that's probably it at the moment. I have got one other thing in the background, but, some of the talent that we've got so far, Judge Cheryl's coming on.
Nice. Big fan of her. She was great.
Judge Cheryl's coming on for the multi-agency approach one.
I think her court, I think I saw something the other day, her court system, I think, has been launched in New Jersey or somewhere.
New Jersey's on the cards, but it's been launched somewhere like Ohio or somewhere.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful. And it's the future.
Yeah.
So we've got all those. So the thing is, right, one of the things that's markedly different about this is there is a 2-hour window for a session, right?
Mm-hmm.
2-hour window for this webinar.
Yeah.
So if it's steaming along and it's been going on for an hour and it's still good and there are still things to discuss, we can keep going. It's not going to go for 2 hours. I'm not going to inflict that on anybody. But it will be a full discussion. And, yeah, you know, you'll be able to access it later that day or whatever. So if you don't want to see it live or you've got shit to do or you need the toilet, you know. So basically to find out about that, you could contact me. You could sign up to the Gaming Boardroom newsletter because I've been publicizing it on that. If you sign up for the associate level. Basically there is a place on the site to register an expression of interest. I've just got to remember what the URL is.
You're really good at this, John.
I'm like a marketing machine.
It's exactly what was going through my head.
Shit. You can't just say that out loud. You know, you've got a microphone next to you. It picks you up again. God. Oh, no, that was my typing, wasn't it?
Yeah. I presume it's / events or something like that. / all events.
It's not / events. It is.
Oh, you got to log in to see it then. Okay.
Now that's find out more about the event. Oh no, that's my old one. That's the URL that I didn't use. Yeah, that's.
Oh dear.
Anyway. No, it's fine. It's fine.
We'll put it in the notes.
So I went to the cinema.
You went to the cinema last night?
I did, yeah.
What did you see?
Bear with me here. I went to see Heathers the Musical.
Okay. Sounds like a blockbuster.
Well, you say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Heathers is a... Technically, you describe it as a teen film. Very late 1980s. But it's a movie that totally subverts the genre of teen movies.
Okay.
Popular girl at school. She's in the popular clique. She doesn't really like herself for being in the popular clique because they're absolute bastards. They're all called Heather except her. She's Veronica. Gets together with the new kid at school and they start killing the popular kids. And they discover that that's kind of hijacked by various parties to humanize people that were in fact really awful in life. It's a very, very, very dark comedy.
It's a real genre film, isn't it? It's like it's 80s, it's a bit of horror, a bit of murder. It's ticking all your boxes.
Honestly, it's one of the smartest films I've ever seen. I think that's the... That was the dog yawning. It's a wonderful film. It's very, very clever. Launched the career of Christian Slater.
Okay.
I say launched it. He'd already been in The Name of the Rose, but it was the one that kind of put him on the map. Winona Ryder had already done Beetlejuice. But that was, I think, probably her first lead role. Definitely Christian Slater's first lead role. And launched the career of the writer and director as well. Neither of whom did a great deal. It was particularly good afterwards. Actually, no, Daniel Waters did write Batman Returns. But, so some genius did a musical based on it. And I'm in an iron about going to see the musical because, yeah, it's a musical. And it's in London, which is far and expensive.
Mm.
But it's Heathers. And then I saw that it was on at the local Odeon, which is just 45 short minutes drive.
It's pretty niche. Can't see them bumping Avatar 2 for this, right? It seems a bit...
One night only screening as well.
Oh, okay.
So, just like...
You and your nerds.
I've totally got to get...
on a Tuesday.
It's a fantastically bizarre cross-section of people in there. There were only about 20 people, but it was like, I found my crowd. You know this because nobody's talking to each other. But it was for, so it was a recording of the live show, and it was recorded in front of an audience.
Mm.
And it was really, really excellent. I mean, it wasn't as good as the movie.
Sure.
Because it's a lot longer, they've got to pack the songs in. But there's one of the key moments in the movie is it all takes place in a small town called Sherwood, Ohio. And bear in mind, it's late 1980s. There's two members of the football team who are, you know, your cliche jocks.
Mm-hmm.
And they stage a double suicide of these guys and leave a bottle of mineral water at the scene. So the police, well, let me put it this way. That scene is followed by possibly the best line in the entire movie, which wasn't used in the musical, which is, "Did you hear? School's cancelled today because Kurt and Ram killed themselves in a repressed homosexual suicide pact." It's that, you get what I mean when I say it's a very, very dark comedy. But at his son's funeral, one of the boy's dads is understandably incredibly upset. But it also his humanity comes out, and he's weeping, and he shouts to the congregation, "My son is a homosexual and I love him. I love my dead gay son." And they did a song in the musical called "I Love My Dead Gay Son." Nice. Which was fabulous. So they really embraced the type of comedy from the movie. Yeah, it was good. But it's weird watching a musical in a cinema.
Yeah, that must be a bit.
But I went with Lorna, who designed mm-hmm. their artwork for this. And she was like, she loved it because she loves live theatre. So she got that sort of an element of that live theatre buzz from it. It's good.
Excellent.
So if you get the chance, you know, just give it a go.
I'll add it to my list.
Will you?
No.
Watch the movie then.
I just can't be arsed, mate.
Have I ever given you a bum steer? Ever?
No, but I'm just not interested. It just doesn't, I've got limited TV time and I'd rather watch Succession or the new Mandalorian's out. Me and my son, we watch that. That's fun. Been watching Murders in the Building. Only Murders in the Building.
That is terrific.
It's wonderful.
It is. It's got that thing. And I always used to find this when I was watching Detectorists. When I used to watch Detectorists, I'd finish like a half hour episode and I would feel like I had been away and seen Friends.
Yeah, it's just,
I think really, Only Murders has a similar vibe.
Really well cast and then really well written, and just the whole thing just kind of comes together in a lovely sort of way.
It's a truly fabulous show.
And then, you know, Ted Lasso is out. New season of Ted Lasso is out. New season of Succession is out.
I'm saving Ted Lasso for a bit. I've started The Last of Us.
I haven't done that one.
I'm four episodes in, and I've got to say, it is truly excellent. The third episode is the one that everybody talked about. Like I read one review that said, this is why we watch TV. This is what it's all about. This is peak TV.
Wow. That's a review. Is it a horror or what is it?
Well, it's kind of a post-apocalyptic type thing based on a famous computer game. Very famous computer game.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Another one.
So there are elements of horror in it, but it's one of those, a little like The Walking Dead, where it's the human story that's the important part.
Mm.
But the that third episode, it's it's a stunner. It's a really great example of how sparse writing with really capable direction and excellent actors can make something that is way more than the sum of its parts.
Interesting.
Just saying, you can give it a go. So anyway, we recorded an episode of the podcast. I don't know if you remembered.
We did. I think talking about excellence is a good segue there into this week.
Because episode. We were joined by the excellent Melanie Ellis.
Yeah.
Not Melissa Ellis, as you call her at one point.
Did I?
I think no, so.
I didn't.
Well, it couldn't have been me.
Wait, on the podcast?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Oh, she's furious.
You're just making stuff up now.
Am I, though?
You are.
Well, we'll see when we try to get her back.
Her people contacted your people, are they? We're not.
It seemed like too good an opportunity to get Mel on, because we wanted to talk about recent things regarding the Gambling Commission in the UK, fines and language.
Mm.
And then yesterday it all came out about that massive fine on William Hill. So it became even more salient. So it's a fabulous and topical episode, which I think we do the topical stuff quite well.
We ride that wave, so we do.
We're surfers, Fintan.
Surfers, just.
Yeah. Surfers in the sea of life. Well, if we were animals, we'd be seals, maybe.
I understand as penguins. We've got a penguin vibe.
We're
kind of bumble around on land and then we, you know.
Slip into the water where we're far more graceful.
Yeah.
I just have yet to find my water.
Okay.
But anyway.
And so, yeah, we've got Mel. And we talk about UK Gambling Commission, the fines, stuff that's going on there. Okay, we do talk about cake. We talk about the Philippines. And yeah.
Oh, there's an analogous tale in there of somebody hitting me with a suitcase. Yeah. Right, it's more of a duffel.
I got tortured to death. And
there's a lot going on. I'm going to tell Mel that you said that. Look at you shrugging like you don't care.
I'm not shrugging for her.
You should be. She's got the law on her side.
Oh, mate. Could you imagine? You're sitting there, you think you're Johnny Big Pants, and in walks the other party with Mel as their lawyer, and you're like, no.
Yeah,
I brought a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, you'd be like, is it 3 T's overall in settlement, isn't there?
Yeah, I need to rebook. I've had an emergency.
Yeah, I just need to go get some advice.
Yeah, that would be a bad day.
We're not saying that Mel's scary, just highly competent.
Amazingly, like, just great at what she does.
So, enjoy the episode.
Indeed.
We're joined by our superstar guest today, our returning guest, one of the, I think, key influencers of the gambling industry, the one-woman TikTok, if you will, of gambling law, certainly within the United Kingdom. Melanie Ellis, partner at Northridge Law. Melanie, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's very great to be here again. I haven't actually thought about doing gambling law content on TikTok, but if you think there's a demand for that, maybe that's somewhere I should go.
Easily digestible sound bites.
I logged onto TikTok to do some research, and I kept it for a week, and I felt like a really old, dirty man on TikTok. It was
because of TikTok.
It was, yeah, no, but seriously, like, it was like if somebody looked over, because it's just the feed automatically populates all these videos and stuff. And it's all these, everything in my feed was just skimpily clad women doing stuff. I'm like, if anybody looks over my shoulder right now, they're going to assume I'm up to no good.
Little known fact, right? But TikTok, when you install the app, it trolls your internet search history to populate the videos.
That would explain. I learned a few hashtags.
I was in an airport last week, and I just glanced over. So I'm always reading when I'm in airports because, you know, it's just kind of quiet time, isn't it? Quiet-ish. But, you know, you're not doing anything other than waiting for a flight, generally. So I'm sitting there reading. I looked around and everybody else, and I mean everybody, was staring at their phones. It's a little bit disturbing. But so I glance at the guy in the next row, and he's got TikTok on there. And I just watched him watching it. And his girlfriend next to him was doing the same thing. They're both just watching TikTok. And it was just this endless one video. 15 seconds, another video, 30 seconds, another video, non-stop. It's like, you know, I understand the whole dopamine and social media thing. You know, I mean, it's fairly friggin' obvious. I understand the whole validation thing, and I do have a theory about the whole thing and how it's replaced the church and faith in modern society, but that's possibly a different podcast. But TikTok is the distillation of social media, and as such, it's friggin' crack. Yeah. And not the good kind of crack.
There's good crack?
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Irish crack?
See what you did there? Good crack. Yeah. Ah, you're good.
Hey, go on, the lads.
I think in a way it's the fact that there's very few things on TikTok that are worth watching, that it keeps you going because you keep scrolling because you're just waiting to find that, maybe that one good video that's going to make you laugh. So it kind of way, the more junk on there, the better.
It's terrifying shit, frankly. Mm. But yeah, what do I know? We make a long form podcast. We're the antithesis of TikTok.
Yeah, we don't sell your data to China, and we don't make any money, so it's all good.
Yeah, everybody wins. Except
we're showing them.
Yeah, that'll teach those billionaire twats. So anyway, right, Fintan, I invited Mel onto the podcast not just because she's one of our all-time favorite guests.
Not just
not even because of that.
Did There's always an ulterior motive with you, John. It's never the, just like, let's check in on Mel, make sure she's all right. It's always work with you.
Planning, scheming. I've always got a racket going, Fintan.
Yeah,
I'm like an old-style con man in many ways. It's all sleight of hand.
But you got to give everything a nickname as well, right? So, like, it's all the all your moves got to have nicknames. That's the con man way, right?
Well, yeah, of course. All of my grifts.
I'm furiously trying to think of one. Yeah, I can't think of one. But...
Yeah, I'll think of some. I'll come back next week with them, maybe. But anyway, so, but no, because we were talking and Melanie Ellis, partner in Northridge Law, had posted something on LinkedIn that was salient, has become even more topical, and you know, using her brilliant legal mind, had cut right to the heart of an issue recently. Do either of you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, because I sent you the link.
Okay.
This is really good.
Where did you send me the link, though?
I emailed it to you.
Oh, fuck. Hang on, I'm going
to
find
ages
it.
Ages ago. So just to cut to the chase while John checks his inbox, Mel, you had a post on LinkedIn last week where it was related to the fines Kindred received. So it was, I think, 32 Red and... Is that somebody else? There was two brands got fined.
Got it. 32 Red and Platinum Gaming Limited?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's...
Platinum Gaming, which runs unibet.co.uk.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so it's two different...
Both part of Kindred Group.
Yeah. So they'd been fined for misdeeds, you'd assume. Mm-hmm. But then your point was, well, actually, it's not quite as clear-cut as that.
Yeah, and I mean, so going back a bit in time, the Gambling Commission's regulatory action always, or you know, more recently, was talking about operators allowing people to gamble more than a certain amount, or allowing them to spend a certain amount of money before they did checks and so on. And then we had the statement by Paul Scully, the then minister for gambling, I think it's like the Betting and Gaming Council, AGM, where he made a point of saying that, you know, it's not the role of the government or the Gambling Commission to tell people how much they should be allowed to spend on gambling. And following that, in the regulatory action against Blue Star Planet, which was published a couple of weeks after that speech, it was quite noticeable that the commission didn't make any reference to what people should be allowed to spend on gambling. It really skirted around that. And at that point, I thought, well, OK, the Gambling Commission has taken on board what Paul Scully said, what's likely to be in the white paper. They're trying to align themselves with that. That they're not going to look at things anymore, really, in terms of people are allowed to spend. But then now in the Kindred action, and of course, in the William Hill action today, we've gone right back to that language about what people are allowed to spend. So it's going to be interesting now to see what's in the white paper. If the government are sticking with this position, we're not going to tell people what they're allowed to spend. But the Gambling Commission is continuing to expect operators to tell people what they're allowed to spend. We're going to stay in the same position. It's very difficult for operators to know what they should allow customers to spend. And I'm not saying that the amounts in the William Hill action were okay. I don't know the circumstances around them. But, you know, for example, somebody spent £23,000 in the first 20 minutes. I mean, very, very likely the amount people should be allowed to spend is lower than that, pending certain checks being conducted. But we're just in a really tricky position, and I'm not sure the white paper is going to help in terms of telling operators, you know, where to actually set the limits. Is it £1,000? Is it £2,000? Is it 50 quid? You know, that they don't know, and it doesn't seem that the government's going to tell them.
And is this because, so in my understanding of the UK legislation, it's more about like, here's a set of guidelines, and you need to operate in the spirit of the guidelines, rather than here's a really strict set of rules that accounts for every scenario. And, yeah. And is this where we're kind of getting, because like, obviously, if you take the 23 grand in 20 minutes, right? I think that was the headline in the BBC today. That's a shocking amount of money in a short space of time for the average person. It's also a really short space of time, like 20 minutes for your systems to kick in and flag and identify and somebody to notice and make a phone. Like literally, you know, you'd have to have an amazing system to be able to do that, to respond as quickly to that, you would assume.
Yeah.
But there's nothing actually in the rules that says, or in the legislation that says, if it reaches this amount at this time frame, you need to do X.
Yeah, exactly. So the customer interaction provisions, that there was guidance to go with those, but there has been no guidance enforced since September as it's undergoing some further consultation. So at the moment, yeah, all we have is a provision in the LCCP, and you know, we certainly know that high levels of spend are, you know, an indicator that somebody might be suffering from a gambling addiction, therefore, you know, the operator needs to take action. But there is nothing to actually tell operators what that action needs to be, when it needs to kick in, you know, what form does it need to take. So they've had to come to realise through this type of regulatory action that actually the action they need to take is to stop somebody from gambling at a certain point. Yeah, as I say, that's not set out in the LCCP, but you know, operators will now be aware of that. This William Hill action that we saw today, it was about gambling activity that took place in 2020 and 2021. You know, probably it was starting to become apparent at that point that limits did have to be put in place, but it certainly wasn't as clear then as it is today. So sort of understand in a way why, you know, that this could happen, that people would spend a lot of money in a short space of time, because although they were clearly doing checks, they weren't limiting people's play pending those checks being completed. And, you know, that's now really the question that operators need to grapple with is where are we going to put that limit? What are we going to say to people? You know, I'm terribly sorry you've deposited £5,000. We can't let you deposit any more until, you know, you've proved to us that you're not a money launderer, that you're not a problem gambler.
And right now they'll go, okay, that's fine. And then they just open up another account somewhere else and deposit another
fine. Exactly. That's what's happening. And operators obviously have very widely different approaches to this, because no particular approach has been endorsed by the Gambling Commission. So they're going to have limits in place at different points, and the checks that they undertake at different points will be different. They may, some may do an open source check and then say, well, okay, you can now deposit up to, you know, a higher amount, and others may want documents. It's really everyone's just trying to come up with what they think is the best approach, and there isn't the consistency. So you know, people will find they're limited at one operator, and as you say, they'll just go to another, and eventually they may find themselves, you know, with the unlicensed operators where they're not subject to any protection, which is, you know, I think the Gambling Commission downplays that, but it seems like that to me, that's a real problem. If the people who are the most likely to be at risk, the ones spending a lot of money going from one operator to the other, trying to find somewhere to gamble, they're the ones who are ending up very likely at a completely unregulated operator with no self-exclusion, probably no interaction at all.
I think it's easy to forget in amongst the people that are rendered vulnerable by this, what are the money launderers supposed to do? Where are they supposed to go?
Money launderers.
Crypto, that's what they're supposed to do.
You know, it's like
allegedly. Where,
yeah, if you look back, and I'm not casting any aspersions when I say this, I'm going to preface all of this with the word allegedly. But if you remember, I don't know if you guys do remember this, don't know if you would have seen it, but there was a casino in Saipan, which is I think it comes under the US protectorate. Or however that works with some islands. And this casino just suddenly started doing massive, massive, massive numbers. And they were like, and this was while it was a temporary casino in a shopping mall, while they were building this enormous palace of gambling, which I think, if I remember correctly, remains unfinished. They owe the regulator tens of millions in unpaid fees, and the whole thing's just gone completely down the shitter because I think if I remember correctly, because somebody looked at it and went, hang on a second, lads. Shouldn't we be checking some of this money? And started checking it, and then things went wrong. But as I say, I might be remembering that wrong. I've got a terrible memory. So anybody litigious that's listening, I'm probably thinking of somewhere else. Sorry. So anyway, what were we talking about?
What are the money launderers supposed to do?
Yeah, Mel, where do they go now? Can't just go down the supermarket, can they?
No.
I don't know, Mel. Nobody's thinking about these poor bastards.
Well, I mean, certainly if that's the goal of the gambling regulator, then they've, I think, been quite successful in achieving a reduction in money laundering spend in gambling, which is a good thing.
Some people are just trying to earn a living, Mel.
Somewhere to take their cash.
Yeah. They're just looking for somewhere to, you know, maybe they'll have to go and buy electronic goods at very high value now and get them refunded. I don't know.
It's high-end watches. That's the...
Oh, it's all coming out now.
It's why Rolexes are so expensive. It's why the second-hand market for Rolexes... So second-hand Rolexes are more expensive than retail price.
What? Yeah. You're making me worried about...
It's very, very, very difficult to buy a Rolex at retail price. So most, if you go to any Rolex store, I mean, for a lot of the watches now, or particularly Rolex, like everything is just like display model only. They've literally got no stock. But then when you look at now some of it's like the staff and stuff are in on it and they're buying stock and then selling it. But if you look at the secondhand market for watches, so you'll have like a brand new Rolex this year's model or whatever it is, and it'll be 2-3x retail price. So a lot of that is that's one of the getting money out of China type tricks.
Interesting. And difficulty buying Rolexes is obviously a problem that you have, Fintan and John.
It was very frustrating.
He breathes very different air to the likes of you and me, Mel. But I had heard a theory that you can link somebody's personal wealth to the amount of hair they have.
Okay, well, dollar.
And I must say, Mel, you've got a lot of hair there, Mel. And Fintan, obviously.
Obviously.
And all I've got is a pair of bushy eyebrows.
The other money, I was reading an article a few weeks ago. It was about this Chinese guy in America. And what he was doing was he was money laundering, but he was arbitraging the Latin American drug cartels and then the Chinese billionaires who wanted to get money out of China. So he was able to collect all the cash in America, in the US, that the drug cartels usually tried to get over the border, which they didn't have to do. He could then get the money into their bank accounts, and then he had some system then to get the money out of China, and then there was cash waiting for the guys going from fleeing China to get to the US or something. And so he had this amazing kind of like, he could launder money cheaper than anybody else because he was making money on both sides. So he was getting paid by the cartels and getting paid by the people fleeing wherever.
Well, these people, their talents are wasted on money laundering, aren't they? If they could be using their skills,
they could be running like Silicon Valley Bank and really making some cash.
Seriously, though,
Credit Suisse.
The old poacher turned gamekeeper thing. I mean, obviously, the most famous example is Frank Abagnale, who the movie Catch Me If You Can was made about. He was interviewed for a magazine I edited back in the day when Catch Me If You Can came out, and just an absolutely fascinating mind. But the kind of intelligence that, when it's focused in the right way, could work for good, could work for bad. And there's a lot of people out there. But the one thing that criminals in this kind of enterprise have in common is high intelligence.
But it's like when they do, like, a lot of the prison programs are focused around entrepreneurship. So a lot of it's like helping people reintroduce back and just kind of get themselves up and running and stuff. But a lot of it's very, because it's, you know, if you're a criminal, you're typically an entrepreneur, just on the wrong side of the law, right?
Yeah, I used to know a guy who, he was a criminal. I don't know if you'd describe him as entrepreneur. Stabby Pete, we called him.
What did he go to jail for?
Well, that's a great question. Parking fines.
Yeah, that's where they got him. It's always the details. It's how they got Capone.
No, stab the warden to death. Stab the parking warden to death. You're not giving me fucking ticket. I'm Stabby Pete. Why do they call you that? But anyway. But we also, I mean, it's just great timing to have Melanie on the podcast. Because it's all fucking kicked off this morning. I read a couple. I was reading, saliently enough, I was reading the Earnings and More newsletter this morning, and that's where I learned about this stuff. Did you read it this morning, Fintan?
I read it every morning. There's
some big fines. Mel, what's happened, Mel?
Well, I think I've already mentioned the big fine this morning.
Yeah.
William Hill. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, it is. That's totally. Million percent.
Okay. I mean, like, it's a big number for William Hill, but it really reflects the size of the overall business. And the impact it has just due to the number of customers.
I think it might be, I might be wrong about this, but I think the Mr. Green part of this, it's not a first offence either.
May well be right.
I may but, well yeah, be wrong, like I was about Saipan. Potentially, allegedly.
But then there's been changes of ownerships, right? So William Hill bought Mr. Green, Triple Eight have bought William Hill. So there's been a, like, under which owners is this a first offence or second or third? And then Triple Eight have just had their issues a while back where they had their Middle Eastern stuff going on and the CEO and the CFO stepped down.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we know that the Gambling Commission isn't going to give any leniency because a company's been subsequently purchased since the offence has happened from the Dor Balderney purchase by Rank. The Commission recently won an appeal on that. So, you know, they're not going to really take any account of how many times the company's changed ownership since the issues arose. I think certainly that's something for both operators and those investing in or buying operators need to take into account, that they will, you know, be held liable for any failings, however far in the past they occurred. If they're taking over, they certainly need to provide for that when they're you know, negotiating the agreements and so on.
Does Mr. Green have any personal liability?
Mr. Green himself.
Yeah.
I think he's fine.
Okay.
One dude. I think they trot him out for conferences and stuff, but it's the same guy every time. I think he used to be anyway.
He's certainly very distinctive with the way he dresses.
The actor.
I assume he's not a PMR holder, so. Or maybe he is.
So how would these things normally, because, like, if we take the William Hill example, so it's kind of like 2020, 2021, and then the fine gets announced in 2023.
Yeah.
What's the when you get caught or the Gambling Commission gets aware and then starts the investigation, like, what does that kind of timeline look like and how long does that take?
So it's a long process, and the often the bigger the operator, the more complex everything is, the longer it's going to take. So they will start, probably start with a compliance assessment. They'll do the call with the operator. They'll find things aren't quite as they should be. Immediately after that, the operator will already be starting to try and put things in place to remedy the issues identified.
Starting to panic.
as we saw from William Hill, it's only because they were very quick at putting remedial action in place did they avoid a license suspension. So it starts straight away from there. So if we look at the William Hill case at the, whatever it was, 2021, the period of the failings ended, that sort of would represent likely when they started the investigation. There'll be a bit of back and forth, and then they'll actually launch a full-on license review, which will involve further investigation. They'll look into lots of different customers from the operator and how they've handled things. They'll identify likely additional of these cases with the large amounts of spend in a short space of time. And then, as you saw from the William Hill case, I think it was towards the end of 2021 they started the license review. Just double check that date. Yeah, September 2021 they started the formal license review process. During the course of that, obviously the transaction completed last year with the sale to 888, so it was all happening at the same time. And then finally we get March 2023, so that's a year and a half for the completion of the regulatory review. A lot of the time it is due to the Gambling Commission just taking quite a long time to think about things. So they'll send a letter to the operator, ask for various pieces of information. The operator will be developing an action plan to remedy the failings. The operator will be working to quite tight timeframes for a response. The commission may give them 2 or 3 weeks to provide information, but they'll give that, and then it could be 3 months before anything comes back from the commission. They take their time to sift through everything and think about what else they need to ask. That's really why it takes so long. It's not ideal, but we know the Gambling Commission has limited resources. And it's dealing with a lot of these actions at the same time.
The headline, particularly with William Hill, that there were some kind of big stats in the headlines and stuff. And this very naive question: could the gambling regulator just ring up an operator and say, right, give us a download of your entire player database and how many bets or game rounds they've done, average stake, P&L, deposit and withdrawal, and I don't know, some sort of activity timer. So basically just like give us and then they just bang that into a pivot table or something, and then just like rank it by, okay, five bets, average stake was this. So it'd be quite easy to spot the outliers of people who are, and you could just like assess every company relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Is that in their power to do stuff like that, or am I just being completely naive?
Yeah, they could do. They have quite wide powers to request data from operators. I think it's really just the actual, realistically, how would the Gambling Commission analyse that volume of data quickly? They'd have to significantly scale up, a data analysis team.
You just hit sort in Excel and you just sort for like the big number and then just like scan down the list, right?
Maybe, yes.
You can ignore everything under 100 quid, right? So that's like,
I see what you mean. I mean, there are indications that the white paper may well contain some sort of additional expectations on the Gambling Commission that they implement something a bit more like this. And it does seem like, at the very least, they could be asking in the regulatory returns for some sort of data, even for the top customers over a certain figure, to analyse and pick up issues at an earlier stage. Although, if you're looking at things like £23,000 in 20 minutes, that's, unless the commission can do a real-time analysis and come back to the operator.
Yeah, you're not going to catch that.
It's not going to catch that.
But you would see it in terms of, you know, it's 23 grand in 20 minutes and it's, you know, 20 game rounds because they're doing max bet for 20 minutes, right? Like you're doing, like if it's casino, like you're max betting at high stakes.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I guess it would require then the commission to make some sort of decision about where is the cutoff point?
Mm.
You know, at what level of spend are we going to get in touch with the operator, pick up the phone and say, excuse me, but customer number 56 is just, you know, yeah,
what's going lost on?
X amount of it. Yeah, they're going to have to decide those limits if they're going to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And does the commission have the legal authority to revoke a license? Can they actually do that?
Yeah, they can do.
They can do that.
I mean, you know, in effect, if they are to suspend somebody's license, it's not going to take long for the customers to go elsewhere.
Mm.
You know, it's going to have such a massive, and the operator will have no revenue for that period of time. So effectively, if you suspend someone's license, it's going to be very difficult for them to
continue operating.
So yeah, they do revoke licenses from time to time, but that's a last resort, and most of the time you'll see the operator choosing to hand in their license because they can see the direction of travel from the commission.
Just get ahead of the bad news.
If you're looking at, you know, a multi-million pound fine and your UK business isn't worth that amount of money, then, you know, it just makes sense just to cut your losses, I suppose.
Got it. Every time you're on, we ask about the UK white paper.
Yes.
I've got another question about that, Fint.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Go on.
Mel, how many times have you been asked about the UK white paper?
Approximately 2,000 times in the last year. Yeah.
Is that all?
Yeah, people ask me about it. I'm sure people ask you both about it as well. I've...
would you ask Melanie for me?
Nobody cares what we think. Oh, yeah.
I'm calculating because every time I say, oh, you know, I really think it's coming soon and in the next month, then it doesn't. So,
well, there's a rumoured new date, though.
Yeah.
Is it 17th of April?
Yeah.
I've just been writing about it in the Gaming Boardroom's daily newsletter. Which,
oh, yeah. That's really good, too.
Might be a little late with. I was just making the point that it's starting to sound like a story told by older casino operators to young casino operators to make sure they stay in line. You don't do as you're told. The white paper's going to come and get you. You'll be sorry.
Yeah, 17th of April, that would be great.
It would make a lot of sense because it's just after my sister's birthday.
Of course, I'm sure then. They've been waiting for that, you know.
Yeah. They wouldn't want to ruin her birthday with.
Implies that it could be bad news. Actually, you know what? With the white paper in mind, something really interesting did happen the other week, and that was. And Mel, you might have to clarify my brain a little bit here because I was jet lagged to fuck when I read this. But was it Metropolitan has acquired the Broadway Casino's assets? I don't know if they just acquired Broadway Casino or whether they've acquired all of Clockfair's assets. But what's really interesting about that is that they didn't acquire it pre-administration. They acquired it in administration. So they probably got it for what you might politely call a very reasonable price. I loved the Broadway Casino. It was one of my favorites in the UK. It was just like lovely, quite a small place. Knew its customers, offered something very different to everything that was just down the road. And really, really nice people running it. And the reason that it's so interesting that they've picked it up is that that license is, depending on what happens in the white paper, but I think that license is about to become considerably more valuable. Mm. So what they've really bought is that license and the potential doubling in profitability, depending on whether the rumored sort of greater leniency on the number of slots happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are obviously far smarter people than me out there making these decisions.
So you get that Rolex money.
Yeah, that's how you get your laundry money. That is Fenton. You should say alleged.
No, I didn't mean it like that. I meant it's smart business deals, so you can pay above retail for a second-hand watch.
Oh, okay. Whew. Thought you were getting a bit. You know what
no,
I mean?
No. It's smart. Look, it's. I think the land-based guys are going to win. I think that's the.
Yeah, I hope they do get the increase in slot machines. I think that, you know, obviously they really struggled through the pandemic, and you know.
There's a great argument. I mean, it's a fair, very realistic argument that the number of slots in the 2005 Act, the slot allocation 2005 Act, was unnecessarily stringent for a bunch of reasons, right? First and foremost, there weren't many casinos that could accommodate a lot of slots anyway, mm-hmm. apart from new builds, because most casinos in the UK in 2005 were very, very small. Like the buildings were very, very small. The rooms were very, very small. Couldn't accommodate network wiring, shit like that. You know, really basic shit. It's only the new builds that could accommodate all these.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sort of adult gaming centres and things like that are reasonably popular in the UK. But as casino customers, we're not a nation of slot players as such, not in the same way as North America, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's questionable even the potential harm that increasing slots could be linked to. I mean, I could be totally wrong on that. And obviously we've had a lot of responsible gambling people on this podcast. And if any of them want to come on and kick me squarely in the plums for what I just said, that would be fine. But I think there are cultural reasons as well that because the number, what was it, 20 in a large casino?
Hmm.
So you go into, I mean, the Hippodrome's not a massive casino by any stretch of the imagination. I think probably Aspers Northampton's bigger. Aspers Stratford's way bigger. And it's a really, really small number of slots.
Yeah, it's definitely higher than that in the 2005 Act large casinos. I can't remember the figure, I'm afraid, off the top of my head.
But it's not a lot, is it? It's not a lot more.
But particularly when you compare it to online, where like the online casinos have effectively unlimited slot machines.
Yeah.
Right, so the disparity there as well also doesn't make sense, because it's, I can just go online and play whatever I want 24/7.
Well, I mean, the online sector has long argued that parity is all it's really after. And that was the big argument with fixed odds betting terminals, wasn't it?
Mm.
It's like, look, you can play roulette in a casino, but you can't play it at anything like the speed you can on a fixed odds betting terminal. And you could, I might be wrong about this, Mel, but you can't say you've got a standalone terminal like a Wiki, you know, from Alpha Street, the TCS one that I forget the name of. You know, you got your standalone terminal that you can sit and play at. In some jurisdictions, you can play 2-3 wheels simultaneously. You can't do that in the UK.
Yeah. Oh, I've just reminded myself of the numbers. So the 1968 Act casinos are limited to 20 slots.
Right.
But yeah, the large casinos, of which there are only 8 licenses are available, they can have 150. Slots. So you have sort of your Aspers, Stratford.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of any casinos with 150 slots in the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the buildings, you're probably only looking at four buildings that could accommodate 150 slots anyway.
Yeah, you need to have a ratio with the number of gaming tables as well. So yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely an argument for the 1968 Act license casinos to have more slots, to be more on a parity with the 2005 Act casinos. I would imagine it's quite a difficult one for the government, because they, you know, with all the media sentiment against gambling harms, to make an announcement that they're going to increase the number of slot machines in high street casinos is a difficult one to get over from a sort of policy perspective.
Well, you've only got to look at the nature of the headlines today, and this is something you both touched on earlier. You know, it's the implied tone that, holy fuck, they fleeced all this money that fast off these people with a problem. Mm. But as you said, Mel, there's no evidence whatsoever that those players had a gambling problem and, in fact, could have been extremely high disposable income players.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned that before we started recording or after, but yeah, no, the numbers obviously look concerning. We don't know what was behind them. Maybe they were money launderers, maybe they were problem gamblers. The Gambling Commission hasn't identified them as such, you know, my reading so far this morning of the statements. What is often the case is people who are spending, particularly on, you know, sports betting, for example, people spending this amount of money in a short space of time may well be doing sort of match betting with another operator. They're hedging their bet elsewhere. It's very difficult for an operator to know for certain whether that's the type of player they have or whether they have someone who's a money launderer or somebody who's a, you know, gambling addict. But, you know, that in some cases that will be the case that they, you know, they have a pot of money and they're spending it at various operators, but their actual losses overall may be fairly low, but maybe they're winning.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
Yeah.
So without the complete picture, it's really hard to tell.
So they're not giving us the full information. It's, and, you know, as the operator as well, William Hill defending against this action from the commission, they would need to have pretty robust evidence that these customers weren't problem gamblers or money launderers to be able to push back against the Gambling Commission. It's really important that during the action, the operator shows that it understands its failings, that it's learned from this, that it's improving its practices. And it's difficult to demonstrate that whilst at the same time saying, actually, it's fine that this customer deposited £23,000 because, you know, we think they're a professional bettor.
Yeah. Because it's hard to argue after, like, if you had systems in place that verified that, okay, you know, here's the evidence to say this is a pro punter or this is a billionaire or whatever.
Yeah.
This is pocket change.
This is Rolex money.
This is, yeah, the Rolex dealer. Mm. Or like then if you've got to go back and you got lucky and, oh my God, thank God it's a billionaire, we got away with it. That still doesn't stand up, right? Because that could have happened anyway. So if you don't have the systems in place, you're exactly right.
Even if the £23,000 person turned out to be a billionaire, the fact is that William Hill didn't establish that for certain before they let them deposit the 23. I mean, if they'd have stopped them and said, sorry, we need all your bank statements and so on before we let you process this £23,000 deposit, then maybe they would have gone elsewhere.
I think I'm not being critical of the Gambling Commission when I say this. Last week, so I was at the Asian Gaming Summit last week, right? And I was doing some work for AG Brief, which was fine. I mean, mildly exhausting, but fine. And as part of that, I interviewed somebody senior at PAGCOR, which is the Philippine regulator. And it shocked the shit out of me. And it shocked the shit out of me for one very, very simple reason. Well, two simple reasons, you probably say. One, he was made available straight away to talk to me. No fannying about, no keeping me at arm's length. Just, oh yeah, we'll be over in a few minutes. Okay, you sure? And two, he spoke fully, frankly, and openly to me. And these are two things. Like, if you're in the publishing side of this industry, you try getting an interview with somebody from the Gambling Commission. Not a fucking chance. I organized the British Casino Awards for, 3 years? I tried to get somebody from the Gambling Commission to come and address the industry in one evening. Not paying you anything, not trying to curry favor, just industries in one room. Come and talk to them.
Mm.
It took me 2 years just to get a no thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was obviously not trying to get any kind of favor off them. No shit like that. Just here's a great opportunity for you to do something that you can't actually do anywhere else.
Hmm.
And I go, you know, so they have gatekeepers and fuck you. Mm-hmm. And yet Padcor, well, Christ, God knows what's going to happen to the Philippines in the next 4 or 5 years. But, you know, they've got another 4 or 5 major resorts planned. It all seems to be going beautifully. And it's just, it really, really shocked me that I was able to have a full, frank conversation quickly just by asking. Whereas in this country, it was no.
Yeah, I think it's partly that they're very cautious about what they say, because whatever they say is going to then be used against them.
Yeah, well, they might give somebody some information like that they need to be able to function effectively.
I do think that's the case. And, you know, if we look again at the William Hill case, if there had been perhaps a more open and regular dialogue between the operator and the Gambling Commission, they, you know, they could have been in a position to ask the question and say, you know, look, is it acceptable that we're completing checks within X amount of time after the customer's first deposit, or should we be doing more? Should we be limiting them to a certain amount before we've got the checks? That, you know, if they'd had that type of conversation, if that was available.
But it's not just William Hill. If you think about, okay, so William Hill are in trouble today for stuff they did 3 years ago.
Mm.
How many other operators could have learned from that, even when the investigation started? Hey guys, stuff that's top of mind for us as a regulator is these types of things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if they'd have put something on their website, even in 2020, you know, the time when they were, you know, coronavirus pandemic, you need to take all these following extra measures to protect customers.
It takes us to where we started this conversation.
But there was guidance.
Yeah, so exactly. So they put it the extra guidance. If they'd have included in that, by the way, we don't want you allowing customers to deposit more than £2,000 without, you know, until you've completed the checks, you need to limit them in that way. That would have been very clear guidance, which would have presumably prevented all of these.
We got in trouble with an operator during the initial corona wave because the words corona and COVID and stuff were banned. But our Spanish language website, obviously corona in Spanish is crown, and their automated checks picked up the words. One of the casinos, like one of their logos had crown or something like that.
Oh, it was called Corona Casino.
So there was some link to royalty and crowns or something. So we legitimately had the word Corona as crown in context, and immediately suspended our account. You can't do this. Go back and kind of go, well, actually, you know, your automated checks are great. This is what it means, and our Spanish team absolutely hate the fact they can't write the word Corona anymore because our system, our back end, will actually block it. So we've had to do a block. So if you think of like the original lockdown, like there was guidance, there was stuff going out, and it doesn't even have to be Corona, but these kind of like, if there is that lack of communication where the regulators are investigating stuff, you don't have to name names, you don't have to get into specifics, but you kind of go, guys, this isn't what we're looking for.
Mm.
Make sure you're not doing this as well.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you've lost like years of compliance effectively.
Yeah, I think there's a good argument for the Gambling Commission to seriously look and consider its industry communications, which are, from what I can see, not what you'd call existent. And I am available to hire on a freelance basis, and I'm just an hour and a half away from Birmingham. So everybody wins.
That's a very appealing prospect, I'm sure, for the Gambling Commission to get you on board.
I'm a giver now. I think anybody that knows me would agree, I'm a giver. I give people my cold. I give people...
abuse.
Very much. Opinion. I give people abuse. I was actually quite grown up at the airport. A raging penis. Stepped around the side of me at the luggage carousel. I was a couple of feet back. He grabs his bag off. His bag was about my height. It's a big, long duffel.
Hmm.
He picks it up, turns around, and swings the bag full length into me.
Nice.
And I just look at him and I go, dude, why the fuck would you do that? And he's like, what? I said, you just swung your bag into me. We shouldn't be in the way then. I'm like, I wasn't. I didn't move. You swung your bag into me. I didn't jump in front of you. And he's like, well, it's 20 kilo bag. Now, in my head, what I wanted to say was, you could have just asked for a grown-up to help if you're not strong enough to carry your bag. Or pack lighter. But I didn't. What I said was, I'm very sorry. I don't understand why that would be a problem for you. See, I managed to not inflame things further. This is my newfound mature self.
It's an allegorical, if I can say it properly, story, because, you know,
put yourself,
you're the gambling commission. He's the, you know, misbehaving operator. You should have said to him, look, dude, watch out. You've got a big bag there. I don't want you to swing it around and hit me. And then it wouldn't have happened.
That's exactly why I raised the point, Melissa. Melissa? Manny? What the fuck?
That's always happened to me when exactly, I get Mel.
That, that's exactly why I raised that point. And I'm really glad that you picked up on that because, and all it took was better communication. I could have revoked his luggage carousel license.
Yeah.
You could have had made pay for your flights. I could
have... For the rest of my existence.
And him as the operator, if he'd have not been so defensive, if he'd have just immediately recognised his failings and said, oh, I'm terribly sorry, mate, didn't see you there, I'll be more careful in the future, could have all been avoided.
Yeah, because you've got to recognise, nobody actually wants to be standing at a fucking luggage carousel. Nobody's happy to be there. And he made one of those terrible mistakes. He's quite a long, spindly fellow. He's probably about a foot taller than me.
But he made that mistake. Long bag.
Made that mistake of assuming that I'm going to be intimidated just because he's looking down at me. It's like, yeah, fuck off. Good luck with that. Which is what the Gambling Commission would no doubt do in such a situation as well.
Small but feisty in the same way.
Tall, but you know, light enough for me to throw at things.
I think we might be taking the analogy a bit far.
The Gambling Commission would have fucked him up and cut him good.
Yeah.
Planted drugs on him, sent him through the red tunnel.
Yeah. Now you're thinking.
Yeah. While shouting, where are the sniffer dogs when you need them?
That one.
Exactly.
So, I got investigated by a sniffer dog at an airport recently because somebody foolishly made a joke about having put a bomb on the plane. So we all had to get off. We had the sniffer's dog. So for the camera, the sniffer dog was the cutest little thing ever. It was so cute and friendly.
But do you find with sniffer
spaniels
dogs
and stuff?
But don't you find though with sniffer dogs and stuff, even though like you know you're not carrying drugs, you're like, oh my god, am I?
Yeah.
And you go through that like mental checklist of like, have I just randomly bought a kilo of coke? Like,
you know, did I pack a bomb?
Is there? It doesn't matter how innocent I am. You're just kind of going, have I? No, it should be good. It should be. Wait, did I get? Is that my bag? Have I got?
I know. It's the same when you're driving along and there's like a siren behind you and you're like, I haven't been speeding, have I?
Yeah.
They'll never catch me. But, that's terrible. But I'm sure all you had on you was probably a few little cake crumbs. Speaking of which, Mary Ellis Partner, Northridge Law, do you have a favourite cake?
Yeah, so, can I pick something that's more of a pastry than a cake?
Yeah.
My very favourite, it's a Norwegian type of cinnamon bun. And... I'm not sure. I'm probably going to completely mangle the pronunciation, but it's called a kanelboller. It's like a cardamom bun with a cinnamon, sugary, buttery filling.
I thought you were going to say, "Can I pick it's a Norwegian, but Danish pastry." Hang on, Mel. I've got to stop you there. Wow, that's
so. It's got cardamom and cinnamon.
Yeah, cardamom in the dough. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of make up a mixture of cinnamon, sugar, and butter, and you spread it inside. You have to knot them into an interesting shape. And then you bake them.
What would count as an interesting shape? A knob?
A knot.
It's very difficult to describe, and I had to watch the YouTube video on slow motion quite a few times to get the
hang of it. You're making them yourself.
You have to like sort of wrap it around your fingers and then it goes through.
She's just like, wow. Multi-talented.
It's crazy.
This is how you make partner, mate. You got to.
Yeah, exactly.
Say you afford Rolexes and hair. Speaking of hair, what do you think of mine? Have the plugs taken?
Yeah.
I listened.
Oh, you listened.
So I was away last week, Mel, and Fintan recorded all on his own and proved he can't be trusted.
No, I did tune in and I did hear his comments about what you might be up to.
Yeah.
Yes. And aren't my teeth looking well?
Mm. So maybe a few more weeks on the hair plugs before they're ready.
You got to rub the ointment in. That's the trick. You got to work the roots.
Yeah. So I didn't have any cake while I was away because I don't eat cake. But I did have, I finished very late a couple of nights while I was working. And so I had to sort of just find food. And there was a steak restaurant in this hotel. And so, you know, I was told I could just get what I wanted. So I ordered this, it was ribeye, and it was okay. It was really well cooked. It was cooked perfectly. It was seasoned really, really nicely. But as a piece of meat, there was nothing special about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was fine. If I'd been eating it in a UK restaurant, I might expect to pay 25, 30 quid for it, mm-hmm. something like that. And I had some like, I don't know what you call it, but I'm going to call it spatchcock. I had some spatchcocked king prawns. So it's split and...
I think butterfly might be there.
That'll do.
That's the
For any French listeners, papillon. So it had some weird shit on it. And so I scraped all the weird shit off and ate prawns. And some chicken wings.
That was a feast there, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that was, you know, it was
hard
one
life.
Meal.
Hard life.
And then the next night I just had the... steak and the wings, I think. And yeah, I just... And all fine, right? And a bottle of sparkling water. And then it came time to check out and they're like, oh yeah, we've got to settle your bill for your things. And I'm like, okay, let's have a look. And she showed me the thing. I'm like, that's a very high number. What's that in pounds, please? And it was like something like £230.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, you know what? It was nice, but it wasn't 200 fucking pounds nice. So I'm probably going to say, just give me a minute to contact the people that booked my room. And they were like, no, it's fine, but I'm going to drop them a message in a minute just to say I'm so sorry about that, Bill. Because I'm a really cheap, as my cheapskate former clients will testify, I'm quite a cheap date when I'm traveling. You know, I'm not eating at fancy places. This was just out of necessity because I finished late and I didn't have a lot of choices open to.
No choice but to have the steak, prawns, and chicken.
Well, yeah, but my diet complicates things. So you know. There were probably other things I could have eaten, but that they wouldn't have worked nutritionally or in a health sense for me.
Are you paleo diet or
carnivore?
Interesting.
So it's kind of at the more extreme end of that. But you know, people are always like, "I can't be healthy." Yeah, but this is year three, and I haven't died, so I'm rolling with it.
But it rules out the cannibals, I suppose.
Rules out what?
Cannibals. Rules out the Norwegian pastries.
It does, yeah. But I like hearing about these things
because
of my colossal sugar addiction.
That's totally fine. So if you're making up an extra batch, just send two my way and
pop one in a jiffy bag. Yeah,
that's very fair.
So it's perfect with a coffee as well. It just feels like
really nice. Nice.
Oh, anything cinnamon is going to work with coffee, isn't it? Yeah, I miss coffee too. Damn it. Seriously, a life with zero stimulants in it can occasionally, when you take time to reflect on it, seem a little monotone.
I feel like you you could come up with some sort of coffee equivalent. I'm thinking maybe sort of a meat broth.
Yeah, I've got some Bovril in the cupboard. Bovril, for anybody that's listening, it's a classically English concoction made from bone broth and concentrated. And you stick a little spoonful of it in a cup of hot water and you make a delicious winter warming drink, famously drunk by people at football matches in winter.
If it's the 50s.
you can still get Bovril at modern football stadia.
Can you?
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I just meant it more as a dish or whatever it is.
It's good shit, Fenton.
It's the world's moved on. We've got 4K TVs now. I think we can move on from Bovril.
I just want Bovril adverts on my 4K TV. What's the point in 4K if I'm watching shit I don't want to watch? I don't want it for TikTok. I want Bovril. Damn it.
You do Bovril talk. That could be your hashtag.
Bov talk.
Introduce the kids to Bovril. There you go.
If you could get some Bovril, that would be good.
Oh, happy prayer would be. Because it had to be a sponsorship that was meaningful, because we've got ethics, we've got principles.
Mm.
You know.
The Bovril gambling files.
Because, I mean, out of the two of us, Fintan's the only one that's ever been recruited. So, you know, our current corporate overlords, you know, that's got a personal tie to you in a way. I'm not saying that they've recruited you. I'm just saying that you get it. Mary, have you ever been recruited? Have you ever been like...
Headhunted.
Poached, found.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I joined my current firm, I moved from a previous firm. So in that sense, yes.
It's all it is, John. It's all it is. It's just you, mate.
It is just me.
Normal just careers me on this side.
I think if this were a game of top trumps, we'd have like two fields where you're both absolutely slaying me. There'd be like, The hair score, mm-hmm. mine would be 0, Fenton's would obviously be 99.
Mm.
Yeah. Mel's, yours would certainly be in the high 80s.
It's generous.
And employability. In employability, you two would both be on 100 and I would be on 0.
So where would you be on 100, John? What's your top trump?
Well, baldness and unemployability.
That's just
okay.
It doesn't work like that.
Are you sure?
They don't just like flip it around.
It's on the rear of the card. I don't know if I've got any. Don't know. It's a tricky one there.
Movie trivia, music trivia.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's solid.
Yeah, but is it 100? Because movie stuff here is quite specific. It's like about 73 to 93.
Niche movie trivia. We can narrow this down to 100.
Find him something.
Actors called Paul. It's like a mastermind topic, right? It's
like... Yeah. And obviously the king of those particular actors is the legendary Paul Winfield, who not only made a career as a leading man in Hollywood, which is hard enough by itself, but he did that when he was both black and gay. And it's a testament to both his strength of character and his extraordinary talent. He's a really wonderful actor. Probably best known to contemporary audiences as, I think it was Lieutenant Traxler in The Terminator, in which he gets one of my all-time favorite credits and Paul Winfield as Lieutenant Traxler. It started a thing with myself and my mate Toby, who is the king of trivia. The king. He spent his entire life writing a book about Quatermass, which you two probably don't even know what I'm talking about.
I do remember it vaguely. Quatermass and the Pit, it was called,
was it? Yeah, you're probably thinking of the Hammer film rather than the original TV series, but I mean, there is nothing Toby doesn't know about Quatermass. And
is different from the Doctor Who mate.
No, Toby is the Doctor Who mate.
Okay.
So he's also the Quatermass mate.
Got it. Okay.
And so since we were probably about 13, 14, we've had and something, something, something as, da, 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 as a running joke between us. And that's all because of Paul Winfield in The Terminator.
Some serious banter, mate. That's some serious... Fuck. I'd say it's wild. You're there with your Bovril, cracking your jokes.
Yeah. Wild. But anyway, I think that just about wraps it up for this episode of the Gambling Files podcast. I'm terribly sorry for going off on a tangent. It wasn't even a tangent because it just wasn't even related to what we were talking about. So that works.
It's a thought bubble.
Thanks, it's on brand.
It's very much on brand.
Do we need to say anything about our corporate overlords?
They're
of
great.
Any variety.
They're Wait, great.
Which ones?
Gaming Recruitment Solutions, grs-recruit.com. It's the website.
It is a hyphen.
Paul a shout. Give Paul a shout. For all your recruitment needs, if you're hiring or looking to be hired, Paul will take care of you.
Yes, good call, that. And our publishing overlords.
Yes.
The And More Media Empire.
Yeah.
It feels so different.
Everything's changed. So different. Everything's
it really
changed.
Has. I've certainly become much more professional.
The scripts are way more polished. I'm sure Mel can
way
attest.
More.
As to like the briefing notes and the,
yeah,
like the green room, the perks in the green room. We got your red M&Ms as you requested. Was that
it was all perfect.
Okay, good. That's how we like to do it.
That's good. And your fancy gin and your Norwegian fucking croissants.
Oh, now Fenton's thinking, why didn't I get a gin?
Oh, I didn't mean to say that out loud.
Oh,
sorry,
no.
Fenton.
Oh, no.
He's going to get a camel ball, are they? So,
that's
a pretty good deal. It's a good deal. If you can post pastries. Postries.
You've just come up with a whole new business idea there.
I think I have, in a word.
Pastries.
I've been
saying. Somebody do mail order flowers? They've packaged it up that it can go through a letterbox. They've done a whole mail order.
I think that's true. And I think they come looking a bit sad and you think, oh no, this was a bad idea. You put them in the water and then they perk up. Yeah.
To be fair, flowers that fit through a letterbox, I mean, it's most of them.
They're not arranged in the bouquet.
Yeah, they're not.
Well, no, bouquet, even if somebody's developed this to go through a letterbox, it's not going to be a full fluffy bouquet, is it?
Yeah. So I think that's, it works.
Mel, thank you so much. You've been wonderful.
You're very welcome.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just @GamblingFiles. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.